Let me begin by making a few general comments about Proverbs, and then we'll go into the real program, which is yours, not mine. I remember last week I asked you to pick a proverb. Now, I know that some people probably do not want to raise their hand in this class, and I can appreciate that. I don't know how many of you have actually done that. So, I've got a plan A and a plan B. I also have a plan C, which is just to ditch the whole thing and do mine. But that was what I was going to do next week. If you do, my wife will distribute a piece of paper, and you can just write it down. You don't have to put your name on it. You don't have to stand up and say it if you don't want to. And you're all looking at me like, Sherry, would you be willing to do that?
Yeah.
What I might have her do is just if you don't have one, don't worry about it, okay? It's no big deal. I got to have something to work with here, right? Let me make this comment. Proverbs accomplishes something no other biblical book does. It simply compiles numerous short instructions for living an effective life on earth. Well, I'm for that, aren't you? While other books articulate profound theological truths, lengthy narratives of triumph and failure, or prophetic preaching to a disobedient people, Proverbs concerns itself completely with instructing people in the path of wisdom. The writers of the book recognized the varied circumstances of a person's life and provided principles to apply in a variety of situations rather than instructions to follow in only a few specific instances. So these Proverbs are generalized, but they also can be specified to particular circumstances. Proverbs states its theme explicitly very early in the book. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, I take that in the contrary way, too. If you don't have the fear of the Lord, you're never going to attain the kind of knowledge that you could if you did have the fear of the Lord. Human reason, oh, man, turn the TV on. Matter of fact, don't turn it on. But look, our society, the kind of things that people say today, and everybody's going, yeah, I'm like, doesn't make any sense. You know, when I was in the drug industry, the legitimate drug industry, I didn't know clinical studies backwards and forwards. I mean, I couldn't give testimonials, you know. I had to give specific statistical data. And what I've noticed in my life lately, and I, by the way, one of the things I'm trying to do is stop arguing with people. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of their time, and it's a waste of my time.
You don't want to do that.
I'd argue with you on that one. But I hear things like climate change, okay? Look, climate's dynamic. It's always changed. We've had ice ages before. How do we get out of those ice ages? Nobody ever answers that question. They'll say, well, you know, the world has heated up 1 degree in just 100 years. And I asked for, silly me. Yeah, I must have a moral failing for asking for specific evidence. You got any evidence of that? Oh, yeah. Well, where'd it come from? How many sites did you was temperature recorded 100 years ago? How did you know how hot it was in Toledo in 1888? What were the instruments that were used? Who recorded the information? 1% is a rounding error. Are you sure that all of those were accurate back in the early days? Now we use electronic, digital, very, very accurate devices. I get no answer to that. They'll say, well, what's your problem? And the other one is, well, I always say, well, what are you going to do? You know, let's say you're right. What are you going to do? Well, we'll just stop using carbon-based energy. Well, you go first. you know, lay down somewhere and eat a peanut butter sandwich, because that's about all you're going to be able to do. We're fueled by carbon-based energy. Now, there's repercussions to that. I understand that. I'm for a clean environment. But I don't understand why it is people don't answer those questions. There's a lot of questions out there, and people will say, well, you know, I just think it's the right thing to do. Why? Well, you know, we want to make sure future generations don't have a problem. Okay, so what are you going to do? No answer. Do you know your data is correct? No answer. I'm going to give you, I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I've studied the so-called criminal justice system, which is named incorrectly. It should be the justice system. Criminals don't deserve any more justice than anybody else. So I have followed cases for years just for something to keep my mind engaged, like, you know, who killed Cock Robin and all that kind of thing. I want to tell you about a case you may be familiar with, and the big, big, big elephants in the room in this case, okay? Let's say you have a huge apartment complex, big one, right? Okay? You have a female police officer that travels to that because, you see, she lives there. And she thinks to herself as she goes upstairs, this is my room. Okay, let's stop right there. Question number one, has anybody else done that in that department, in that apartment complex? Yes, 96 other people had reported they did the same thing. So there's the first elephant in the room. She was charged with murder. I don't know if you remember the case I'm talking about. I think you might. Well, why weren't the other 96 people? Why didn't they go into the apartment they thought was theirs and shoot somebody? It's not a hard question, guys. Think about it. What was that?
They didn't have a gun.
The fact that a police officer have a gun in a circumstance that you would not expect?
Maybe they talked to the other person.
I want to get this straight first. I know why the woman had a gun. Okay. She was a cop. Yeah. Cops have guns. That isn't the issue. There is a bigger issue staring you right in the face. Why didn't the other 96 people go into those apartments and look around and say, well, what are you doing here?
The doors were locked.
In her case, was the door locked? It was open. Now, let's say you get off late at night sometime. I don't work much anymore. But you get off work, you go home, you're tired, you're exhausted, you walk into a large apartment complex of maybe 1,000 different ones, and you get to a room you think is yours. Now, once you see that door open, does that confirm or deny your earlier suspicion?
It confirms
it. Because what did the other 96 people do? They had a way to tell. Try to unlock it, it won't unlock. Yes? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong apartment. Or you walk in the door, you think it's your apartment, and you see somebody standing over there that doesn't respond to your questions. And you're a police officer. And you think it's your apartment. And then they say, well, wait a minute. Why didn't you check to see if it's your apartment? That was one of the charges. Why didn't you check to see if it was your apartment? Would you do that? Would you walk into what you thought was your apartment, where the door was open? And you would say, excuse me just a minute. I have no idea who you are or what you're going to do. Let me look around and make sure all these things in here make sure it's my apartment. Would you do that? Of course not. You don't know who this guy is. It was a terrible accident. But she was convicted of murder. No way. No way. Aren't you glad I said that? wasting time up here. Let's get to the Proverbs. All right, who's got one?
31.
What do you mean 31?
Huh?
You mean the whole thing?
Actually, verses 10 through the end.
I can't do that much at once. Just give me, that's my fault. I should have been more specific. I just wanted one. Pick one of those.
A verse?
Yeah.
10.
Okay. Let's all turn to Proverbs 31:10, and then I'll ask you people what it means. And let me read this. Ah, yes, this is a very, very good verse. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. There's a lot of solid things to think about in there. First of all, why do you think the verb is find instead of get? What's that?
You gotta go hunting.
Yeah, somebody better. First species is going to keep existing. You don't usually find men standing around and women come up and say, hey, not to bother you, would you marry me? No, that's all right. Okay, fine. That doesn't happen. Here's another piece of information that you might find odd and maybe explanatory as to why men have such bad reputations. What percentage of men do you think ask women in public to go out on a date? Oh, all of them do that. Those slobs. I mean, they're just these jerks. I mean, they're creepy. Yeah, but are you sure you're not talking about a small group that keep asking everybody the same thing? I actually have, it's my wife asking me a question. Thank you. I didn't.
Well, I mean, mostly, you know, you just don't want a good-looking woman. You're going to have to observe and watch. I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time.
I can't get in the weeds on that one. But I do want to say this. Studies have indicated the reason women don't like being approached by men is they're all being approached by the same men over and over and over and over again. When I was going to college, about 10% of the guys were female crazy. And I do mean nuts. I had people dragging me into their rooms at 2 o'clock in the morning to write a letter back to a girl. And I mean, I didn't like it. This guy, that's all he had on his mind. So women perceive maybe all men are like that, and all men are going out and saying, hey, 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 you know. That's not true. That's only about 10%. The problem is these guys don't care. They don't care. One guy actually made a bet with his friend, and he says, how come you're always going out with women all the time? He says, I don't. It'd be nice, but I don't. He says, well, I ask them, all of them. And you say, what do you mean? Well, halfway appropriate woman for me, I'll just ask. And he said, I'll bet you I can get a date in an hour at a bus stop. Okay? Now, don't look at me like that. This is the way life is.
Which one of those two guys are you?
Neither. I just heard about this. This guy goes to the bus stop. And every time a suitable woman, you know, age-wise and so forth, came along, he asked her out. The first one didn't say anything. She walked off. And the guy that was there, you know, over here observing, fell. Well, there you go. He's wrecked. No, he's not. Here comes another one. He says something. She said, get away from me, you creep. You know, he thinks, well, that's going to spoil his day. Didn't bother him. He doesn't care anyway. Finally, the seventh one said, sure. That's the way these guys are. Those are the guys asking women out all the time. I mean, in a public place. Aren't you glad you knew that when I'm trying to do Proverbs? Let's go on with this. I like the second part of this verse, for her worth is far above rubies. One time a man was asked, I hope I haven't told this story before, but if I did, it's because I'm old. One time a man back, way back in the day, had a servant, and he told him he was going to have a very, very famous person come. He wanted a great meal for that person, so go out and get me a good piece of meat. And he did. He came back with a tongue. Okay? And the master said, well, thank you. I mean, this is wonderful. This is excellent. A few weeks later, the same master told the servant, he said, well, you know, I've got a guy coming here I don't even like very much. I don't want to, you know, I really don't want to make a big deal out of it. So just go out and get me a relatively bad piece of meat. Maybe he'll leave early. So he comes back with a tongue. And the master says, now, wait a minute. You brought me back the same thing you did the first time. Why did you do that? And he said, well, master, there's nothing better than a good tongue and nothing worse than a bad tongue. There's nothing better than a virtuous wife and probably in the minds of a lot of men, nothing worse than one that isn't. And there are plenty of comments in this book about what it is like. You got guys running out into the desert or living on the roof rather than live with a contentious woman. That doesn't apply to any of us. I'm not saying it is. Who brought? Do you agree with my analysis here?
Sure.
Okay. All right, who's got another one? I know that I've got some people have already given me, and I'll get to those. Yeah. 21:31. I'll let everybody find that. It's the last verse in that chapter. The horse is prepared for the day of battle, but deliverance is of the Lord. I'm thinking of a biblical battle when I'm thinking of this one. But how do you see the first part of that? What does that mean, the horse is prepared for battle?
You're ready for war. You're ready to go after whatever comes after you.
Right. You got the stuff you need to fight, right? You got it all. Armaments and so forth. But it says, deliverance is of the Lord. Now, how does that apply to the first part? Well, let's say you're outnumbered 5-1, and they have chariots and you don't. Which one of these two parts of this verse prevail?
The second half.
The second half, absolutely. I think that's the main point. If the Lord is for you, who can be against you? And I think of Gideon, and the Lord surprises him by saying, you got too many men, get rid of some of them. And he says, okay. And then he says, you still got too many men, get rid of more of them. And he does. And, of course, he prevailed in the battle. And the Lord said, I wanted to get the glory. And he did. Because he's God. Somebody else. Yes, ma'am.
20:30.
That should be easy. 20:30. Right across the page. Below. And if we're on this, what translation do you have?
New King James.
Okay, so do I. Blows that hurt cleanse away evil, as do stripes the inner depths of the heart. Now, the word blows in the first part of this couplet, not talking about blowing on somebody's skin, you know, like, this means slugging somebody. Blows that hurt cleanse away evil. What do you think the meaning of that is? Okay, hey, there we are. Let's just make it easy, okay? It's not my business how other people deal with their kids, okay? I just know the way my dad dealt with me. if he knew I did something super stupid, I'm not talking about just stupid, that was every day. If I did something stupid like steal crab apples out of Mrs. Smith's backyard and then hide behind my porch and throw them at cars as they went down the street and mistakenly threw one at a police car, my dad would sit me down for an hour's lecture, in which he'd say, "Now, son, we really have to remember that it's very important." No, that didn't happen with my dad. My dad delivered blows. I never did it again. It cleansed away evil. Stripes, as opposed to that, in the second couplet, refer to very bad punishment, particularly for a slave, where you're just throwing a whip. Now, I know none of you whip your children. At least I don't think you do. I mean, with a whip. Do you? Anybody do that? I've never done that in my life. I hope I never do. But in this culture, what they're trying to say is when you pull a military man out of a line and you flog him in front of his colleagues, that's going right to his heart. He's not only pained, but he's also humiliated. And it could well be, I don't want to get in discussion about whether that kind of punishment is good or bad. My interest is in his response, and his response would be that it would, as do stripes, the inner depths of the heart. In other words, he feels it not just painfully, but deep into his heart. You guys can comment on these, too. You can say, "Well, that sounds good, but what about this?" Which one did you do?
I tried to go for the second one.
It's a good idea.
You know, I always told my kids, if it hurts me more than that it hurts you, I'm doing something wrong.
That's good, yeah. And you were delivering those for the sake of the child. Right. It wasn't because you were trying to gain anything. No, it's not going to benefit you. Somebody else, Mac?
Mac. On the stripes part, it tends to be public, and it absolutely has an effect on everyone else around.
That's true. I never thought of that, yeah.
Because it not only gets to the heart of the person having it delivered, it gets to the people around.
Exactly.
Because I remember my father one time, my oldest brother, who thought he was tough, discovered he wasn't.
Yeah, which was good for him. Yeah, it's good for you, too. You watch your tough brother there fade away. Sherry, do you remember the story about Richard and your grandmother with a switch?
Yes.
Okay. You don't want to talk. You don't want to say it, right?
Well,
I don't know German, so I can't tell the story. What did your mother usually use to provide that? Yeah.
And when they came through the door, he happened to be the first one, and she gave it a crack, and it hit it, and all of them went off.
Wow, Mom, you're so...
She was saying, "You blitz out me slogging. The lightning has struck me."
I've always enjoyed that story. It's a good one. Okay. We got another one here. Oh, wait a minute, Mac Jr.
You pointed out before these are not like 100% applications; they're just general rules.
Exactly.
So, you know, sometimes the it takes wisdom to understand when not to do that.
Absolutely, they're taking it. The Holy Spirit's taking it that you have taken the advice that to understand wisdom or to get wisdom, you must fear the Lord. And if you do, you will have the discretion to understand the idiosyncrasies of these verses. Somebody have another one? Yes.
22:2.
Oh, it's right here. Yeah, this is a very good one. The rich and the poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. 22:2. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a great verse. This is the kind of verse you like. It kind of makes you feel good, right? Because in human society, you guys probably already know this. Sometimes we have, I think it works both ways. You have poor people are sometimes looked down on. Okay? And you say, well, why are they poor? Why don't they have the neat things I have? Or in this day and age, you kind of got it turned around. You say, well, wait a minute. This guy's rich and he was found not guilty. Aha. Aha. That's because he's got money. So you can get prejudice going both ways. The point here is God created all of us in his own image, rich and poor. And the fact that some are poor and some are rich is really not something that we can really control too much, except yourself. You see, people like to solve the world's problems so they don't have to solve their own. You know, I can go out and march with a sign saying, we need larger bags of Cheetos. And really, you know, if I could work up a tear and get on TV, I could, you know, people say, well, man, maybe a guy really feels seriously about that. Most people would say at that level, that guy's an idiot. But that guy's doing something we all do. If I have personal problems with my life, what better way than to go out and march for the unintentionally long-haired people who are not treated fairly by this society? And I want to solve that problem by having the government give everybody a haircut. You just stared at me like, it doesn't make any sense. Of course it doesn't make any sense. I'm trying to make the point here that a lot of people take social justice because they don't want to face themselves. The conscience, what's that? I know. You've been there and done that, right?
Part of the Democratic platform right now.
I have no comment on that. What I'm trying to say is I'm awfully suspicious of people that say they really feel bad about it because Bobby didn't get a cake. I don't care if Bobby got a cake or not. Lady, if you want Bobby to get a cake, go get him the cake. We have personal responsibility. United States, one of the differences between the United States and other countries, at least early on, is you could make something out of yourself here. You weren't born into a caste system. And people always talk about, well, there was a patriarchy. Well, there was a patriarchy and a matriarchy at the same time. It was called nobles. They're up here, 1%, nobles, male and female. Everybody else? No. That's where the power was all at. And as a consequence, you just, certain things wealthy people could do, not just wealthy, but noble people could do, that regular people couldn't. And I remember there was a discussion with a gentleman once, and somebody was going on about, well, this group that, and this group that, and it's not fair because that group this, and that group that. And he says, let me tell you something. 99% of Americans are the descendants of either slaves or serfs. Go back in your ancestry long enough, you may run into King Henry VIII, or you may just run into people that tilled the land for somebody else, and that's more likely, much more likely, if you go back far enough. I took my father's side all the way back to 14-something, and then I kind of got scared and stopped going because I said, where's the big shots at? You know, where are these guys at? Well, they weren't in there. You know, millers and guys that did sheep. What do you call that when you take stuff off? What? Yeah, Shearing and sheep. See those two words? I can't say those together too well. All right, who's got another one? Was that said? Oh, go ahead.
Talking about the rich, you've got to remember one thing right now.
Oh.
Epstein did not kill himself.
Who didn't?
Epstein.
I have no comment on that at this time. Okay, next. Is that the one you gave me before? Okay. You asked me to write it down.
I did.
Yeah, I did. Do you think I wrote it down?
I don't know.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. 24-7. Great verse. Wisdom is too lofty for a fool. He does not open his mouth in the gate. Well, let's break this down into a two-part couplet. Number one, wisdom is too lofty for a fool. That's almost like the one about putting a beautiful piece of jewelry in a pig's nose. A fool doesn't deserve wisdom, evidently and undeniably, because he doesn't fear the Lord. That's why he's a fool in the first place. In two of the Psalms, it says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. You want a definition of a fool? There it is, biblically. Fool says, no God. Definition of a fool is somebody that says that there is no God. Which brings up an interesting question to ask anybody who tells you that there isn't a God. And it's one of those great big waving flags that nobody ever sees when they say that. I don't know if anybody's ever said it to you. People have talked to me, I don't believe there's a God. And I said, well, what God don't you believe in? How do you know there's nothing if you don't know what you're talking about? Can you describe this God you don't believe in? Well, I. No answer. Okay, Albert, thank you for that one. He does not, I'll get to you just a second, Tom. He does not open his mouth in the gate. There's a good reason he doesn't do that. He doesn't sit very high up in the order of things in the gate because everybody knows he's a fool. Matter of fact, I hope he doesn't talk in the gate. I think he would get kicked out. Let me go to Tom first. Okay, let me go to Mac first.
To me, that verse almost contradicts the first one because if the guy's smart enough to keep his mouth shut in the gate, he has some level of wisdom. Because I always know that
that's right. Now, let me ask you this question. Do you think someone that is unable to talk, who is a mute, is automatically wise?
Someone what?
Who is unable to talk, is a mute, as we call it in the medical.
No.
He's not wise.
But this is not talking about someone who's mute.
No, but what I'm saying is, it is true that a wise person will not engage like you're talking about. You don't argue with a fool. We don't want to get a circular argument here. I understand your argument. You're saying, well, wait a minute. How can he be a fool if he doesn't open his mouth in the gate? Because there he's keeping his silence. I think there's a nuanced difference between the two. Maybe I'm wrong. But he can't be both a fool and be wise enough to keep his mouth shut in the gate. Can he? Okay, so we're going to have to go if we can't answer all these questions. Who else has got one? Not everybody at once. Jane? Who? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Tom. Went right past you again. How come I keep doing that? What? Do you fear the Lord?
Oh, yeah.
You're not a fool.
Well, I guess what I meant to say by that is we put our foot in our mouth once.
Of course we do. It's all part of being a human being. And by the way, I see a lot of fools opening their mouths all the time. Matter of fact, I see more fools than wise people talking about stuff that frankly seems weird in our society today. Right? Yes.
Okay, I have another problem.
Okay. 2024. Okay. This is one of those spectacular proverbs, I guess I would say. A man's steps are of the Lord. True, God has sovereign power. How then can a man understand his own way? Now you got to make a choice. You guys. Is this saying that since God is sovereign and we rely upon him? Can I finish the question first? Now, see, I lost my whole concentration. I'm an old guy. I do that all the time. I go in a room to get something. I forget what it is. I come back, and my wife says, "What'd you get?" And I said, "Nothing." How then can a man understand his own way? A man's steps are of the Lord. Well, what I'm trying to say is this. Is this meaning that if God controls your life, you are unable to understand your own way by yourself? That's the way I take it. Sir?
This goes back to the man who has a horse prepares the horse for war, but the man is from the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
We should put in the effort to what our next steps are going to be, but ultimately, since God is sovereign, we don't know what the result is. It's all in God's hand.
Right. Sure.
That turned out better than I expected. It had nothing to do with me being smart or making the right decision. It's obviously just a blessing from the Lord.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it means. I think when it says the second part, that a man cannot understand his own way unless there's the Lord. By the way, do you know what you call all of these situations where people don't understand their own way? Therapy seekers. How many times you see, "Well, I went to therapy. Why? I don't understand my own way." But that's a different situation. Okay, we have another one.
What about the next one?
Oh. It's a snare for a man to devote rashly something as holy and afterwards to reconsider his vows. That sounds like somebody in the Bible, doesn't it? Jephthah, one of the judges, swore an oath, in this case to God, and what did he say he was going to do if something happened? What's that?
Yeah,
he was going to have a daughter roast. There's a dispute as to whether or not he actually went through with it and did it, but it was a rash vow. But the part that interests me is devote rashly something as holy. I mean, you got to be thoughtful if you're going to declare something to be holy, do you not? I mean, you can't go around and say, you know, this is a holy cup, and I promise that, and then say something, and then later say, "Well, it's just a cup, forget it." Yes.
In the heat of the moment, we are liable to say anything.
I've noticed that. For me. You know what's really hard? This is hard. And you guys have had the same experience I have. Let's say somebody insults you with a smirk on their face. Cheek shot. And you're sitting there having a battle in your mind, because you know that you have a comeback or something you could do to even up the score. What are you going to do? Well, I don't know. Have you ever been in that situation? I'm not the only guy, right? Had somebody that kind of immediately look down on you for some reason. You didn't know why, but maybe they have had a reason why. Well, let me tell you about the concierge at this place I stayed in Wisconsin. Sherry is saying, don't do that, right? I did? Never mind. Who's got another one? Oh, by the way, who brought this one up? Okay. Did you get a satisfactory answer out of that?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody got... What's that? No. Has anybody got another one? Yes, ma'am.
Proverbs
15:1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Oh, that's a classic. That's a classic. Our pastor's quoted that many times. You know it, and I know it. We fear the Lord. We know that's what's, you know, it's so, but there's something inside of you, isn't there, that just wants to say something to that smirking lady behind the desk. Are you sure I told that story? Okay.
I got an example on that one.
Good. Bad language.
I said, you know, I was wrong. I'm sorry. He says, well, okay, forget it.
You dealt with that wisely. This book's all about wisdom. What else we got? Yes, ma'am.
14:12.
Well, 14:12 says, this is another one of those I think that we all appreciate and probably remember. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. What do you think?
Usually whatever we think is going to be the wrong way, go the Lord's way.
Obviously, if you go to the Lord first, you're doing the right thing. But I know myself that from time to time, I think I have got that brilliant idea. And it's, it's going to be great. You know, I'm going to roll it out and everybody's going to be amazed that, boy, this guy's got a brilliant idea. And then about halfway through, I understand that, you know, actually this isn't a brilliant idea. It's garbage, you know. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Right, so
the counter verses.
Right. So the wisdom of this verse is go to the Lord.
Right.
I find it sometimes, you know, that I'm praying that the Lord will provide direction and guidance and clarity. And I find that sometimes I'm impatient to wait for that clarity.
Yeah.
And I try to do something, and I have to tell myself, you ask the Lord to do something, you just wait on it.
Amen. Well, it's obvious, I think, that you know, most of you folks have read this book, but would anybody, does anybody do what a lot of people do and read one chapter a day? And you say, well, of course not, I've already read it before. Why would I want to read it again? What's that? You'll forget, yeah. Well, you could pray to the Lord and ask him if he thinks it's a good idea if you read it every day. By the way, here's the amazing thing. You can read a chapter of this book and get great value of it, out of it. But if you're in a position where you think you don't have that much time, and we're all busy these days, you could even, say, read half of a chapter and get great good out of it. Or you could only read 4 or 5 verses and get great good out of it. And really, if you stop and think about it, since we have to give attention to that which is right before our eyes, you could read one verse a day and get great good out of it.
Right. Wisdom that is God's given wisdom. So it works for anybody who applies this, but it doesn't say.
No.
Right. We need to get,
yeah, let's get that straight. You're not going to be. Proverbs is not a book of salvation. Proverbs is a book of practical application for wisdom, for seeking to be close to God, to give you wisdom to deal with the problems of everyday life. Not salvation. I'm glad you said that because we need to keep reminding ourselves. This is the Old Testament. And as we close, we are going to close. Heavenly Father, thank you for this time and your word. May the worship service ahead, all of our conduct today, glorify you in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. And thank you guys for giving me those proverbs to talk about.